you want them.
You get me mine?
No.
Well, why not?
I didn't think that yours had wired capability, do they? Oh.
Oh, that's loud.
Yours is too loud? I can bring you down.
Me and my ears.
You and your ears. Your ear
so
holes.
So fun.
But you feel like that's a good level?
I just moved to that and you're probably like, don't do that.
I gotta put my hands
yeah, somewhere.
No, put it where it's comfortable. Just have a decent
I'm like moving it
distance
over here.
To your to your mouth hole and the microphone.
Cool.
Okay. Well, hi, babe.
Hi. Did you hit record?
Yeah, it's been recording the whole time.
Oh, cool.
You never know when there's magic.
Definitely include all of that.
You never know when there's magic.
Dork.
This is the Kate and Colby Show Garage Sessions, special episodes we record for you, our pod fam. Join us as we return to our roots with just two mics, two co-hosts, and one desire to talk about things that matter.
Can we take it back to 95? Before we had this drama in our lives. Just staring at the screen every day and night. I miss the rush of living in real life. Go get your DeLorean. Oh, miss the summers.
It's so, you know me and my easily distracted...
I do know you.
ADHD, can't hold still, can't pay attention thing. We're down in the garage, and this is our very first time recording an episode that's not live. And when we're down here and we're live, it's a totally different feel. Like, you've got it set up in such a way, and there's people there, so I'm, like, totally locked into that.
Yeah.
But now I'm down here, and I'm like, garage, there's a million things.
Looking all around.
It's so distracting.
Past me into the...
Yes, my whole body is, like, adjusting. It's weird. I don't know, Martin.
Yeah.
I have issues.
No, well, one like, of them is how bad you need me.
When we used to record these kind of episodes, just us, we would do it. Well, I had several different iterations,
but anyway,
this one's new and apparently very distracted in our garage, but I'll adjust.
Or you won't.
There's a lot of stuff down
There's
here.
There's a lot of stuff down here. I'm down here
You're
quite
down here
a bit. So for me, it's like, what? It's like my second office.
Well, plus you don't. You quite literally have a very different brain than me, and you don't even have that issue, but yeah. Anyway. See that box from my childhood with the puppies and the ducks on it, and I'm just... There's laundry that really needs to be done.
That's good.
There's a lot of stuff. There's bikes, and I'm thinking about how I really need to get a bike because I want to go on bike rides.
We've been talking about that for years.
Oh my God, what is wrong with us?
Every once in a while, I hop on Ty's bike. I'm like, this feels good. This is fun.
You must do it in the middle of the night while I'm sleeping.
As soon as
the
I...
The things you say you do that I know you don't actually do.
As soon as I said that sentence, I knew you were going to...
You're lying.
Call
I would
me out
know if you opened the garage, hopped Ty's bike out, hopped on Ty's bike and started riding around
the
neighborhood.
Every once in a while? Okay,
sure
the truth
did.
Of the matter is I think I've done it twice.
While you were like filling up his tires and you just kind of...
Yeah, it has happened. And it... And I just mean I've maybe ridden up and down the driveway once. All right. So.
Y'all, this is a thing that happens with us where Colby mentions this part of his life that I know nothing of and I call him on it.
I don't. When I employ hyperbole
Your reality
or exaggeration,
is strange.
It's weird.
Okay. I'm not going to go down that rabbit trail. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope.
No, I will not go down that with you because you call different things hyperbole and it's not the same thing.
You don't want to make this episode about that?
Nope.
Okay.
Welcome back to these episodes where it's just you and I talking to each other. This is what we do. We devolve.
We don't have any producer or live audience to like be our
stopping us
mediators.
There's nothing stopping us from Kate and Cole being... No filter. What are you looking at? I lost you.
Just think, no, make sure the meters, checking levels.
This also happens on our live show where I'm like talking with somebody and we're engaged in something. I look over, I'm like, where did Colby go?
I know, it's a lot.
Oh my God.
Hold.
It is. You do. You hold a ton. You produce the shit out of our stuff for us.
It is shitless by the time I'm done with it.
It's the new Schitt's Creek.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm doing I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
You had to think about that for a really long time.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm answering within the ballpark of honestly.
Yeah. Do you want to explain what that means?
That I'm doing well or within the ballpark of honestly?
That you have to make that move of like checking to see if you're answering within
the ballpark. Yeah, I mean, so I just
know how you are.
You know, as we've talked about before in the show, and people that know me know this, that I identify strongly as a type 3 on the Enneagram, which means one of the things that means is that just very naturally, I end up spending a lot of my energy projecting particular images outward.
Including how you're doing.
How I'm doing. So when I talk about being within the ball range of answering honestly, it's pushing past the initial like program. The initial program is sort of set by default to match the projection of always got my stuff together. I'm never tired or feeling weak. I'm just good all the time. That's the initial program.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that when I respond to that question, I pause long enough to check in. And then it's still oftentimes a choice whether or not I want to, honest I want to be.
Yeah. I love that. I've never heard you. I've known you most of your life. Have we known each other longer than we've not known? Yeah. Oh, by far. Oh, bounds. God, that's true. Yeah. We've known each other since we were 12. Duh. I'm trying to pretend that we're still in our early 20s, apparently. That happened ages ago. I don't know why that was a question for me.
Do you still feel that young?
What is math?
Are we the stereotype? No. Okay, I was wondering if we were, because I am the stereotype of, I still feel in my mind like I'm
really
young,
but yeah, I don't. Okay, I could go down that rabbit trail, but I wanted to say I've known you for a long time, and we've talked about this kind of, I don't want to call it a phenomenon, that's not what I mean, this facet of your being and a lot of others. I mean, you are not alone for sure in that. We've talked about that a lot, but I've never heard you describe it quite like that, and that was really helpful for me and really beautiful share too. I like that of a default setting.
Yeah,
like you just, because I always imagine it, since we're so different and I don't, while you're not alone and a lot of others are like you, I'm not like that, and so I've pictured it differently than how I just heard you say it. So in my brain, I always imagine that like in real time, you're always processing this projection, these projections.
Yeah.
But the way you just described it, it finally hit me. Oh, duh, of course not. Of course you just have like a deep, you've got things locked in. Yeah. And then everything from there is kind of real time managed, but you've got a setting or whatever. So that was really helpful to think about, especially with the how are you thing, because that's a big one. You know, if presenting that I'm okay and I've got it all together, that kind of thing. Yeah, and then I loved that you're like, and then from there, I just still decide if I want to share more than that. That's cool. I don't know. That was really helpful for me in processing how you and other image projectors are.
I was doing
what goes on for you.
Interview last week with a fellow pastor, and I think we were just in the pre-conversation stage, just like small talking, and he was sharing how this how pandemic has just been really hard for him, and so he shared a few things, and then he said, how about you, how's it been for you? And I considered tamping down my response a bit to sort of compensate for the fact that he just shared that it's been really hard for him, but I went ahead and just trepidatiously was like, actually, this has been really good for me. Like, I've actually really enjoyed. Is that the right? Well, yeah, sure, certainly at times enjoyed, but yeah, just so in that moment, I chose to, I chose to be within the ballpark of authenticity and honesty, even though there was the part of me that was like, do I really want to respond to this guy who just shared how hard it's been by saying, not me, it's been great.
Yeah.
I've loved this last year of being holed up in my house with my family and resetting priorities. And
what all came up for you?
He seemed fine. Like he totally held. He was as I would have predicted, which is grateful that that was my experience. Like, he wasn't, like, resentful.
Right. And I know you, and I know you didn't go, oh, really? You've had a hard time? Well, I'm doing great.
You, like, must be doing it wrong, man.
You weren't being a jerk about it. No. What all came up for you in that, though? Was it really just the, like, don't want to follow up someone had a hard time with positivity?
Yeah, it just felt like a hard right turn.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And you and I have talked about, in general, how, like, 2020 for most people was really rotten.
Yeah.
Well, I say most people.
Who knows, right? Like,
who knows?
How do we judge that? Or
We just mean it was obviously rotten in some very clear ways.
Right.
For how many people, who knows?
In the world.
It just was obviously hard. And for us, it was surprisingly, well, you can answer actually how it has been for you, but for me, it's been...
Well, I think we've talked about it already. Yeah. On a micro scale in our family, personally, it's been really good. Obviously, we also hurt for the world, but yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. I do wonder what the numbers are there. Because a lot of folks have been having that conversation about, obviously, pandemic pushes a pause on society. And then, like, what do we learn? What do we shift? What do we change? What do we realize when we take all these things away? What happens? I do wonder if overall, and it's hard, it feels really brutal and blunt to be like, if you just set aside the sickness and dying and the grief, mm-hmm. I don't mean it in a flippant way though, but if you can separate those things out, I do wonder what the numbers are for how many people have experienced. Right. But everything else about this is really good. I don't know. For a while, none of that made sense out loud, but in my head it did. But I think for a while people were splitting it between because the biggest thing was social distancing. I think people were splitting it in half between the world of, like, extroverts are sad and introverts are happy. Mm. But I don't think it's as simple as that. No. I think there's much more that shifted in our society than just whether we were hanging out with people all the time or not. I don't know.
Because I imagine even, a great number of people who lost their job as a result of this pandemic might have even found that themselves be better off, not just financially, because in the early stages, the government help for unemployment was, for many people, more than they were making, but also just they got to stop doing their crappy job that they might have hated and be able to get a few months of relief. So even just splitting it off into, like, who got to keep their job and who didn't, because we're at record number of employment. Even those is, like, it's just never, it just probably isn't always that. There just isn't any sort of.
Yeah, it feels like a giant spotlight on the nuance of life that things just are not clearly split between good and bad. There's just been. I just don't know a different time in my life of seeing more clearly the good and the bad all mixed up in one. It's wild. Clearly, it's been devastating, and obviously, if we could eliminate pandemics altogether, we would, but God, all the beauty and change, and moving forward. I was talking to a friend the other day about and I know there's folks who will resonate, but my panic that comes up at the thought of life shifting back, because pandemic has been such a healing time for me personally, and so any talks of shifting it all back, I don't even like the back. It's forward, but it's backward. Like, how do you even talk about it, right? But anyway, any talks or thoughts of, you know, reopening and life coming back in all its different forms, it causes me truly literal panic. I don't use that word lightly. I've had to employ all kinds of mental health care, like emergency situation mental health care for myself at just the thought. Like, we haven't even really shifted much in our lives towards any sort of non-pandemic life. And just the thought is freaking me out. I was talking to a friend about it, and this friend finds herself on the other end of the spectrum of more the people of, like, the extrovert and, like, I hate the shutdown life and I just want things back kind of end of the spectrum. And first of all, the fact that they don't feel the same way as me and yet entirely just understood exactly what I meant by knowing me was just beautiful. Like, isn't that great when someone can do that? Yeah. So I was already, like, blown away by her empathy there, that move. And then on top of that, she said the wisest, just most amazing thing. She was like, yeah, we all did this chatter collectively in society about, you know, things in the world because of our shutdowns have gotten better. Like the waters are getting clearer, the animals are coming out, you know, people are taking better care of themselves, all these things that are good, right? And everybody's chattering about it and saying we have to hold on to that and we have to actually let this huge shift in society actually change us and take it forward and make a new normal. Everybody was saying that. There was like, you know, movement around it. And she goes, but yeah, of course, we all say that, but we'll just go right back to our normal because it's just what we do. Like society just has way too hard of a time actually making.
Yeah, it's like New Year's resolutions.
Totally. So she was just naming that, and then which I just found very helpful because I think that was part of my thing. Is like, wait, hold on. I thought we all said we were gonna do something different here, and no one's. What are we doing? Where's our plan? I want someone to have the plan to help us do that. And then she helped me walk through how. And this is a very nuanced idea. But like, we all have personal choice, no matter what society's doing. And so she helped me walk through how I still get to choose to do things differently in my life. Even if society just keeps going about its way and doing the old normal again, I do still get some choice. Yeah, it still sucks that society's not going to make these big overarching changes, but just helping me remember personal choice, that felt so empowering to me that like I never have to go back to having my calendar as full as it was before. I don't. There's nothing that forces me to do that. The world will reopen and I can still control my own calendar. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Opportunities will present themselves to fill it up again.
But I can choose. Yeah. And that's just one little example. And obviously a lot of the things in my life are, I have so much privilege around it. And not everybody gets to make those personal choices, but even just the tiniest personal choices, that was just really helpful for me to remember that, to move through the panic of like, I can still do some things to curate my life the way that I want to and not just go with the societal flow back to hustle, hustle, hustle.
Yeah.
The hustle makes me sick.
Is that one of the biggest things for you? Is the fear of returning to the oppression of hustle?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. There's a lot. I feel like I have a lot of layers to my fear of moving out of pandemic life. Some of it is, I will never, ever let go of my gratitude for this miraculous, out of nowhere, didn't deserve it gift of getting to spend this much time with our kids at these pivotal moments in their life. Like, who gets to spend this much time with their adolescent children? Like, just feel so lucky for that. One of my biggest struggles in life is feeling like life goes so fast and we're all going to die so soon. I have like the panic button set on high all the time around that, like we're all gonna die tomorrow. It's just my constant experience. So getting to really slow down in pandemic and spend every second with our kids, I don't know, it was very helpful for me. And so I think that's why I panic at the thought of, well, they're all gonna be gone again as soon as, you know. Anyway,
thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I guess that's how we're doing.
Now is when we would pause for the viewers to tell us how they're doing.
I know, isn't it funny? I've really kind of gotten used to the live
feedback. Instant feedback. I mean, PodFam, you can email. You can take a moment and email us right now if you want. We'll read it.
Or when it's posted to our Instagrams, you can comment or, I don't know. I've loved doing the live shows. How about you?
Oh my gosh. So much fun. It just fills so many buckets of mine and scratches so many itches and creates all sorts of new metaphors for me to make up. Yeah, I love it. It's a blast.
Right?
It's a blast. Because I love doing this part with you already. And then, just getting to add some of our friends, both friends that we knew in real life and friends that have become friends as a result of being a part of the live show. Yeah, complete strangers. Just having them all be a part of the experience together.
Yeah, like, and it could have been that, like, literally no one showed up.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe people don't want to sit down on a Wednesday That's night right. and watch us talk on the internet.
That's right.
Like, that could happen. Remember we were driving through our neighborhood and we both had this idea? You said it first, but I was like, I was just going to say that. And we both wanted to do the live show. Do you remember that?
Thinking.
We were on Mulvaney Street. I remember what street we were on.
Really?
Anyway, yeah. Oh,
yeah, that helps mm-hmm. me, actually. Yes.
But the point is, that doesn't sound like a big share, but if people know you and I, that's a big share.
That's a big deal.
Usually I talk you into something or you talk me into something.
That's right.
Like, I can't even actually think of another example where we both just wanted to do something. It's always one of us talking the other into something.
Yeah.
It's usually me dragging you out of the house to go do something in nature.
Yeah.
Or go on trips, and it's you dragging me into work stuff. Or watch a movie.
Come on, babe. We watch shows every night. Just do a movie.
Okay,
and then hold on. I'm not done. Okay, I'm not done dogging on you. And then I can't even tell you, PodFam. This is gonna be a bit vulnerable here. So who knows? I can't even tell you how many movies. So Kate and I have like a running list of movies that we are like, yeah, we want to watch it. That's great, and we'll eventually knock it off. But then there's so many movies, y'all, that I say, I really want to watch this. And Kate's response is, ooh, I do too, but I don't really feel like it right now. Like that list, the number of movies.
He's actually being very kind.
Number of movies where I've pushed pause on watching them because Kate has expressed the desire to watch it, but I'm not in the mood for it right now. I'm not feeling it right now. Okay, babe.
Literally every night of our lives, every movie, the list will just stay a running list, and then poor Colby has to find time to secretly watch it without me. Ooh, I actually am really interested in that,
but I'm not sure I'm feeling it right now.
I'm just not feeling it right now. I'm just not in the mood for it right now, but like I want to watch it. And then Colby's like,
"This mood to arrive.
When will the mood happen for these 500 movies that we watched?"
That's part of why I was so shocked the other night that we watched. I know. The Batman versus Superman movie. Is that what you're going to do?
And can
into?
I tell you? Well, no, I don't remember what I was going to say, but but can I tell you that when we watched that, I pushed myself into that one.
Yeah.
And I ended up being so glad. But oftentimes, if I push myself into watching one that I wasn't in the mood to watch, I regret it deeply.
Totally.
So it could have gone either way. That was great.
So, yeah, that's a funny part.
I'm so sorry about
And I feel like it's a maybe a newish phenomenon, because I feel like our history together is very much, and I'm going to say this and then don't argue yet, very much you like loving watching movies and like we together loving watching movies. And I feel like over the last, maybe, I don't know what the time frame is, your sort of diminished desire for movie watching feels like it's grown, even though I don't think you would say, and you wouldn't need to say, that you'd love watching movies less. I don't think that is necessarily relevant to it. It's just, this seems to be as of late.
Oh, I think your description's spot on. I think I might even say I enjoy watching movies less.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, okay. I think you're just spot on. Yeah. Well, two things. One, I do know that I also had, while I used to say yes to watching movies with you more, it also meant that I fell asleep
movies. That's true. That was often what happened. Yeah. And now you're just more aware of like, I'm going to fall asleep if I watch a movie, so I don't want to do that. Yep. Or I'm going
exactly,
to bed.
Exactly. Yeah, I think a lot of things have changed. My ability to tell you that I don't want to do something and I'm going to do something else, or ask you to join me in doing something else, that's shifted. Just better at naming that. I'm more in touch with what I want and how I want to spend my time. And then, so there's those things. And then also finally figuring out that, because I think the PodFam knows, but I'll just say it again because you can't say it enough in our society. I struggle with mental health. It's a full-time job keeping myself even at like a middle bar of good mental health, right? And I finally figured out the link to what I consume. There's so many facets to mental health. We make them binary conversations all the time. Is it medicine or is it not? Is it this or that? It's everything. There's so many different kinds of depression. There's so many different kinds. And we try to just say depression is just one thing. And there's which fix is the fix? And that's, as a person who actually has depression, I know that to be categorically, unequivocally false. I've now figured out probably 10 different contributing factors for me. And I just finally figured out the link of what I consume. What I consume affects how I, and it makes so much sense. It feels obvious now that I say it, you know, but I was oblivious to it. And I think it was because I had this desire to consume books and movies and TV and all the things I wanted to be in on what everybody else was in on. I didn't want to be left out, you know, fear of being left out. And I just enjoy all of that. I mean, I freaking love television. It's like my favorite thing. And so I would just consume and consume and consume and consume and then wonder why I felt like shit all the time. Mm. It's finally figuring out that link, that what I consume will affect the way that I feel. The more comedy I watch, the happier I am. The more sitcoms I watch, the happier I am, the better I feel about life.
It does. When you say it out loud, it does sound pretty obvious.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So the more, you know, I love, it's hard because would you call it a contradiction, I guess? Because it means I have to sacrifice things I love. Because the things I enjoy that I consume also will make me depressed. Does that make sense? So, like, for instance, an example would be murder mysteries. I love murder mysteries. Right. I can't watch them. They depress me. So it's like having to give up some things I love for the betterment of my overall health. You know what I mean? Which, I mean, that's life, isn't it?
It is life, yeah. You might enjoy eating cupcakes and ice cream every night because it tastes good when it's happening.
Yeah.
But then the impact later.
Your tummy might not feel so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Even when you were talking about the, you know, you've identified 10 different contributing factors and how.
Which I threw that number out of nowhere, but
I'm sure I know. Is around. I know. I'm not going to ask you to name them.
I probably could, though.
But you were saying in the context of that there isn't just like one fix for it. And to even go back to the ice cream physical, like it sounds very similar to like the world of dieting or that whole culture where there just isn't one way to approach sort of physical health. So why would there be one way to approach mental health? Of course there's not. Yeah. What might be not really good for one person to eat might be totally fine for another. What might be good for exercise for one person isn't for another. So, yeah.
Of course.
Even in the world of mental health, that has to be as true.
Yes. Of course. All right.
Yeah. So, it's miraculous that we simultaneously had this idea, this shared idea.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
This podcast live. And then part of that, I think, was driven just by the various skill sets, that we picked up along the way, because of the pandemic, right? Yeah. So doing our church live, watching some friends of ours, Heathen
podcast, Happy Hour,
do a live event on Thursday nights.
Thanks for the inspiration, friends.
I can't remember if I started doing I think I was doing my perspective shift, before. We took this live. So anyway, we just had a few other things that were like, there's a potential market there. Just market meaning like there's interest. People would actually respond to it, even though the jury was out on that, whether that was actually going to be the case or not. And there was like, it was an interesting creative endeavor for you and me. And we're both creative people who like to create things in the world. We like when something doesn't exist. And then we do a few things and it does exist and we can point at it and be like, that didn't used to exist in the world. Now it does because we did it.
Yeah.
Like that energizes us. It feels good. And for whatever reason at that time, and it's kind of almost always feels like that, sitting down like this to record a podcast has been challenging for us.
Yeah.
And so we thought if we put it live and we tell people we're going
to
go live.
We have to do it.
We have to do it.
Was it. Our it was accountability like forced, plan.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And then we started inviting guests on, which added another layer of accountability. We're like, now we've scheduled people. They're ordering their calendar around this time. We have to show up.
Yeah.
And do the same.
And then that's what our live shows have become, is interviews with guests, mostly. And we play some silly games. But I was telling you how much I miss this part where there's no... Because with the live show... and I love it. I tease you a lot about it, and I should probably stop because I love it, but it's very produced. There's all these gimmicky things, games, what do we call them? Segments, and, you know, push the button and have the intro, and here's what we're going to do. And it feels very constrictive for me and my being, which is good. We need it. And I was like, I miss the just sitting down, turn the mic on, and doing what we've been doing for however long we've been sitting here, where there's no plan. We're just going all over the place talking about mental health when we didn't mean to. I miss that. Yeah. I miss that a lot. So.
Yeah. So now we've got our, we're set up, like Kate said at the top, in the same space that we do our live show, but we turned the table instead of facing east to west, now it's facing north to south, and we're looking at each other instead of into a camera. And only one light is on, which I know makes you really happy.
Oh, instead is of that a, why I feel so alive right now? Instead of
175 lights are on.
Oh my God.
I almost turned on this big light just to get a photograph of us. A photograph? Photograph. Photo.
You guys, my that word husband weird? Anyway. And lights. I texted my best friend the other day and I said, if my husband buys one more light, you're going to need to come pick me up. She said, deal.
Where would you go? I'm just trying to weigh
the woods.
The risk here. Where would you go and when would you return? Because I have some lights that I've bought, but I haven't set up yet. They're still in a box.
For what?
I'm afraid to answer that question now.
Dear Jesus in heaven on the right-hand side of God.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Why?
No, I do really... I don't...
Y'all.
I love lights. I'm trying to think this through. Like
The other day... Okay, so I...
Even I've, back and... Go ahead. I'm going to save this
no,
thought.
No, yeah, you share. I've had this dream of having a plant wall.
We've gotten into fights over lights, by the way, PodFam.
Oh, of course we have. Yeah. Yes. You don't understand the light situation, people. Anyway, so I've had this dream of having a plant wall. You know, a wall that just has plants hanging on it instead of pictures. Like, I've been obsessed with collage, picture walls, art walls forever. And then, are you mocking me?
Keep going.
You're such a teaser.
It just sounds like something I would say. I would say well, and then describe.
A plant wall sounds like what's a plant wall? I don't know. Maybe some people would ask what a plant
maybe
wall
I'm just
is.
So used to you that I now I know what it is.
Anyway, instead of a wall with a collage of picture frames on it, I did one with just plants and I loved it. I was so happy about it. And then
so cool.
And then one night, all of a sudden it's lit up like Disneyland. And I'm like, what the fuck? What is happening right now? And Colby's like, your plant wall is so pretty. Yeah. I wanted to light it up. I'm like, you know what I didn't need in my life? Lights shining on my plant wall.
But it looks so...
And then the audacity to make it seem like that was for me.
But that's it kind what of was. No, you're right. It was like 90-10. But
so hard.
I was just...
These lights are so not for me. Anyway.
Okay. I have a couple questions.
Yeah, sure.
One is, do you like the way it looks, though, at nighttime when it's lit up a little, like with those subtle underlights, so you can see this gorgeous plant wall that you've created all day long, not just... when it's visible from sunlight.
I mean,
sunlight.
You have to remember that I see in the dark very well, so I see differently than you do. So I think that's part of our difference is I take in everything differently than you do. I don't need light. I mean, you know, our whole life you've walked into a room and been like, why are you sitting in the dark? And I'm like, I am. Like, I just, no, I don't know. Point. Like, I read in the dark. Like, I don't care. So that's part of it is I'm just like, oh my God, it's so bright in here. It feels like walking into a bright room.
That was awesome. It's so bright in this room. It's like
walking into a bright room. So that's part of it.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for me to like a light. I'm just not a big fan of lights.
I just love a good accent
light.
I
know, and you love it. And so I feel that I've done an okay job of supporting
I think you've been
that.
Brilliant.
There are lights knowing... all over our house. Yeah. The thing that I'm really working through right now that I'm telling you while we're recording a podcast is that I hate colored lights. Like, they are so cheesy and dumb to me.
Are you going to come at my hot tub them. Lights?
That's what I'm saying. But it's okay. That's okay. I can sacrifice, because the truth is that all, like, decor and just home looking stuff is me.
Yeah.
I have complete control over it. If I decide this room is going to be a different color, I just do it. I don't ask you. I just do it. If I want to, you know, whatever. I hang stuff everywhere. I switch things up. I decide what colors, what, and what things look like. So if I have to live with your goddamn purple lights, I will. I just love you that much.
Thanks, babe.
But every time I look out there, we have this two-layered deck. So there's the main deck, and that's got just the normal Costco. And I do love those. You know, the, what do you call those?
Our friends call them market lights.
Market lights? Yeah, market lights. That's what they're called.
Are they?
Market lights. They're great. And then the next layer of the deck is just like, the whole thing is a hot tub, which is fantastic. But it didn't have any lights, and so then Kolb strung purple, or not purple. They're any color he wants them to be. So sometimes they're purple, and sometimes they're blue, and sometimes they're blue and purple.
Oh, that's what they are right now. And I thought you would like it, because I don't know why I thought that. I need to stop thinking. I need to stop thinking you will like anything I do with lights. I continue to set myself up for disappointment.
Okay, I support anything that you do with lights,
and I need to let that be enough.
Yeah.
Switchfoot, let that be enough. Like.
That's a good song.
That's a good song.
Switchfoot. I should still listen to Switchfoot. There's nothing wrong with listening to Switchfoot.
I don't think there is. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway.
I know, but that's hard for you, huh? Because you're, correct me if I'm wrong, but your your auto setting is wife needs to like everything that I do.
Oh, 100.
Yeah. Like fully approve, be excited about,
that's right.
Like, hey, Colby, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. That's what you would desire from me. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just neutral, or God forbid, just putting up with something, that's really hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, it's a good practice for me.
Yeah, good for you then.
I was hoping to win you over on those alternating color, blue-purple light. I thought that would be the one. You're like, actually, it looks kind of cool, babe.
Yeah.
And like, when you're in the hot tub, you don't even like sort of the mood of the color. Oh, dear. Okay. Well, maybe. I'm trying to like solve it, but you're sitting here saying there's nothing to solve.
No, it's good for me to support you having something that you like, and it's good for you to live with me not liking something. Yeah. It's all good.
I was thinking a minute ago about, I think I've always really enjoyed lights and lighting and ambient lighting, mood lighting, to go back from my worship leading days. Mm-hmm. And maybe it started at Salem Alliance, my first job, like with our friend Dave Hastings, and just learning that whole world and setting stages, and then working at the Grove in Arizona and creating sets and stages and just figuring out how to use lighting to set a mood and make things. Anyway,
And I love that. Like, I definitely notice if I go to another space and the lighting is good, and like productions that you've put on, like, that's great. I think it's just about my home, you know? It's just my sensory stuff and my deep sensitivity to light and wanting everything to be a dark cave. I want to live.
That is what you want. And like, that's a really good point for you. It's like, babe, I could already see my plant wall just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's just shadows on the wall. There's nothing to see. Put a little bit of uplighting, just a little bit, not like Disneyland. It's not lit up like Disneyland. It's just two little uplights that are turned up.
Okay, I'm sorry. You missed the analogy or metaphor or whatever. Not lit up like Disneyland. You're right. Usually that's said like...
quantity. Oh, you were
like
talking...
lit up like Disneyland. I mean, like, if you go to a theme park, in the style of...
Got it.
They'll have like plant walls and plant sections, and they have uplighting on
and
them.
That's cool.
I literally just meant that. Yeah.
And people travel around the world to experience it.
To see the plant. That's why people go to Disneyland, to see the plant wall with uplighting.
For the
Disneyland.
Oh.
All right. This has been a long how are you section, huh?
I like it.
Me too.
I like it. I like just saying what up to our pod fam.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was craving. I'm so glad it worked out. Yeah. I was just craving a good old not produced, not planned. Off the cuff, as they say. Why? Where does off the cuff come from? What does that mean? Hmm. Why is off
Should we
the
do
cuff?
Some quick research?
Oh, I thought you would know right away. I usually know stuff like that.
Make it up, but more and more you're seeing through that. I've had to get more crafty.
Oh, God.
Terrifying. Extemporaneously, impromptu. I know what it means.
Yeah, we know what it means. Why does it, where does it come from? Isn't a cuff like a sleeve?
Language log. The other day, someone asked me about the origins of the phrase off the cuff. I've always assumed that had something to do with an old practice of writing informal notes on men's detachable cuffs. Men used to have detachable cuffs? Off the cuff, as if from notes made on the shirt cuff. Origin, United States, go us, extempore, on the spur of the moment, unrehearsed.
But as far as I know,
the practice of wearing detached and disposable cuffs ended by the time of the First World War, even before. Oh, so there's a little bit of controversy. Is that really the origin of it?
Okay.
So I'm done reading. It's really long. Oh, good gravy.
Why do people write that much about off the cuff?
Why would you want detachable cuffs?
I don't know. So you could take them off at night? I don't know.
And leave the rest of your sleeve on?
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't know.
Sleep on the sleeves, but not the cuffs. That would
Hashtag strange ideas that humans have had.
Do you remember those pants? I used to have a pair.
Where you zip the bottom off. Did they become shorts or cropped pants?
Yeah. Well, both. Maybe at that time in style, those were kind of an overlap. They weren't quite long enough for capri. No, I guess they weren't quite long enough for that short era where I think like 6 men in the United States wore capri pants.
Were you one of them?
Nope. Oh, okay. I worked with a guy who was. I mocked him in my head.
What those are called? The like three-quarter?
Three-quarter, yeah.
Capris.
But now they're working, like, now jeans are so high up the ankle, like, they're, jeans now are almost at the capri length. It's really funny. Like, the trend is, yes.
That's funny. But
I'm not there yet.
I've gone back to liking loose-fit jeans. And by gone back to liking, I mean, I finally decided I don't care that the whole world likes skinny jeans. I was happy in the 90s. I don't need to leave the 90s. I can wear what I want to wear. You were happy in the 90s. Yes, clothes were the
style-wise.
Best. Loose fit tees, loose fit pants.
No love for the 90s fashion.
Vans, tennis shoes. That's all I care about in life.
I mean, I love you. Love the way you dress.
It's a wonder that we stay together.
Yeah.
You're real cute.
I love yours. Is real cute. Yours is real cute.
Yours is real cute. And he just turned red. No one can see you.
And now for a quick pause in our conversation to tell you about Buy Me a Coffee. And no, friends, this is not an ad where I tell you about what kind of coffee to buy. Although, if you're curious, shoot me an email. I'll let you know. No, Buy Me a Coffee is a platform that allows you, our pod fam, to show your appreciation and support for the Kate and Colby Show through financial contributions, like directly to us. You can make one-time gifts, sort of like, you know, money in the tip jar, thanking us for the episode, or you can sign on to become monthly supporters and provide recurring donations to the show. This podcast is free for you, the listeners, yay! But it's not free for us, the creators, which is why we've begun to invite you to join us by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. Again, that's buymeacoffee, all one word, .com, you know that part, /Kate and Colby, KateAndColby. And thank you for your belief in our work and for your support of the show. And now, back to the conversation. All right, so Pod Fam, what are we saying here? We're saying that...
What? Why do you got to do that?
I'm just turning to... They might at this point be wondering, what's the point of this podcast?
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about something.
Oh, we were? No, hold on. I knew that. I didn't mean to act surprised. Oh, we were? Like, I knew that.
You just now thought the how are you has gone on so long.
I wondered if maybe this is just like a little catch up. Little spread of tomato sauce that like people, we just release it as a, your hosts just wanted to share a little thing with you. And then we can save our actual convo for maybe another epi. Maybe we pause this and keep going. I don't know. I mean, we're at 45 minutes already. So if we actually get into our convo, that could be.
An hour?
Whoa. No, we don't say anything in 15
people
minutes.
We have hour-long conversations on podcasts all the time.
That's true, they do. But it's also, I don't know. Maybe I'll just check in with you. What would you like to do? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Okay. Sorry, everything's making me laugh right now. I'm so tired, too. I like longer episodes, and we're not really putting out episodes right now.
Yeah.
So,
and
I think it's great to keep talking.
Okay, that's good. Because, and it means we'd have to muster up the energy to come do this again.
Exactly. And now we're giving our pod fam 5 minutes of you and I trying to decide whether to keep talking.
I might edit that out.
Cool. I like it when we say we might edit things out and then we just don't.
I'm not sure if I've ever edited anything out.
We say, well, we might edit that out, and then they just get to hear us say, we might edit that out.
Sometimes I mean to edit it out, but then when I do the editing, I don't actually listen to the whole thing. So I might just skip over the part that I thought I was going to edit out.
Mm.
It's a lot. Okay.
Yeah. You do a lot of work.
You do a lot of work.
It's true.
Let's high five. Okay, I thought we would talk about a thing you said at church the other day.
Let's talk about a thing you said one time.
You, just to give our pod fam a bit of a background, I'll set you up. I'll tee you up and then you can give it a whack.
Sure.
It's a golfing metaphor, kind of. So we are in the midst of talking about this phrase, it all belongs.
Yeah.
And which has become like a catchphrase / motto
at our church.
/ summation. Yeah. At our church as a way to name that we really do try to hold a almost like a flapless tent where everybody gets to be a part of it. And everybody and everything belongs. That's just sort of the big picture motto, but we're conscious of how that's not entirely accurate because not everything belongs. And even when we say it all belongs, what falls under the it and what does belonging mean? Anyway, so we thought we'd take a few weeks at our church to talk about this phrase and unpack it a bit and explore it. And yes, recently, this podcast is not going to go out today.
You can still say yesterday when it is true for you in the moment.
Okay. I'm still going to go with the other day. The other day,
maybe we'll edit that out.
You gave a talk about this It All Belongs series, and you were working on a way to articulate what does it look like to create and hold a space in which belonging can happen in a safe and I don't even know how another word to describe it. Maybe you can put some more language to it, but you came across this metaphor, this way of talking about it that I just thought was freaking brilliant. And you were contrasting it with, you were talking about birthing and dying and the experience of giving birth to kids and the experience of watching your mom die and how in each of those instances, the spaces that those happened in your life, there wasn't thought and intention and care put into curating the space and making sure that the potential for goodness was maximized while the potential for long-term harm and suffering was minimized. There was just no thought or care put into that. Yeah. And as a result, those things maybe weren't as maximally beneficial as it could have been, and they contributed to maybe some negative side effects that could have been avoided. And so you used those, and I'd love to have you share that, just summarize it here in a second, but you used those then as a way to talk about as co-pastors of this community, that part of what our role is to set the intention in the space and to say, okay, within this community, we can't do it perfectly, obviously, but we want to try to maximize the potential for people's well-being within this community. Mm-hmm. And we want to try and minimize the potential for harm. For that to be done.
Yeah.
And that requires that we are thoughtful and mindful about the space so that when we say it all belongs, there's actually some things that would work against the maximization of well-being in a way that you would even say, okay, but that thing can't enter the space or threatens the whole project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think most folks know now, but just in case those who don't, I recently completed a training process for becoming a death doula, or as it's often called, an end of life doula. And end of life doulas, that role was created from a place of experiencing birth doulas and being like, wait, there's so much overlap here. We could apply this to end of life. The support that birth doulas give to birthing people, end of life doulas could give to dying people. And
is there a way you could give a 3-sentence synopsis of what a birth doula is?
I will in a second. I'm
great.
Getting there.
Okay.
Totally. So I started doing this training, and as I was going through it, I knew leading up to these classes that it was going to, I've done a lot of work to heal from and move through the experience of my mom dying. I knew that going through this work of training to be a death doula was going to bring all of that up and that I would process it all again. Yeah. But I knew I was in a space where I was ready to do that, where processing it would be very different from like 10 years ago or whatever, right? Or 20 years ago. So I knew that I was going to think through the experience of watching my mom die. What I didn't realize is that going through this death doula training would make me think about the birth of our kids so much. I was shocked how much that would came up for me. And so it was actually that experience of training to be a death doula and having that make me think about all of the birthing experiences I've had and being like, oh, and that's when all these metaphors came flying into my head. But yeah, a doula is a support person. That's the quickest way to say it. A doula does not take the place of anything in a birthing situation. A doula doesn't replace a doctor. It doesn't replace a midwife. A doula is an entirely extra support person to be trained in the needs of birthing people and therefore make sure all those needs are met. Curating the space. And everyone knows that you can plan all you want for these big life events and they're never going to go to plan. But there's a difference between, you know, plans never going the way that you think they will and then just
not having a plan,
right? Yeah. There's such a big difference. So a doula is there to help you with all of that support, a lot of education, helping you understand what is happening to you and your body and the things that you'll need to plan for this big life change. And so as I was training to do that work for dying people, I was looking backwards because the model came from birthing doulas. Same thing with dying people. A death doula doesn't replace a doctor, or replace a nurse, or replace a hospice care worker. A doula is an extra support person to help people emotionally. And as I was looking back at all four of my birthing experiences, especially my first one, just because it was the first, probably, and I was the youngest, but just thinking about being able to name, because those birthing experiences, birthing our four kids, had lasting negative emotional impact on me. It was very hard to process their births emotionally, and I was not ever able to name that because A, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to be like, I just had a baby. I'm so happy. Right. So that's a whole issue all on its own. And then B, like, what was I supposed to say was wrong? Because I didn't know. So there's just this constant angst, but like not knowing how to name it. And now after going through death doula training.
Can I ask you a question about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, please.
Did you, how much do you recall being conscious of that in either of the four instances? Like, how much is it now reverse engineering and saying, oh, I think I was
no, the reverse engineering is being able to name the why.
Okay.
I always was conscious of the fact that you it were. Was, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Hard too, because what I named earlier on in the episode about mental health, right? So I've already got all these layers. I've named like all the different mm-hmm. things that my mental health is a lot to take care of anyway. But I definitely knew that each birthing experience added a just a lasting, I don't know how to describe it better than that, but like a lasting emotional impact that I wasn't, like if you have an experience and you're like, I can't emotionally process that. Like I just don't know how to move through it. I've got some feels and I don't know how to move through those feels. You couldn't relate to that experience, right? Just yeah. like in general of like, I just had a feeling and I don't know what the feeling is or how to name it. And I certainly don't know
I mean,
how to
I'm
move
learning
through
to
it. Yeah.
Identify that.
Yeah. Yes. So it's just that experience, but you can imagine with a birth, it's happening to your body. It is this huge, and you literally bring a new life into the world.
And like you said, externally, all the expectations for what your feelings should be are joy and happiness and goodness. Right. And so right. the fact that maybe they weren't all that was probably yeah. pretty confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I'm learning, over the years, and especially since doing death doula training, is that, you know, birthing and dying both are like, that's just the most, is there anything more universal or more human than those experiences? No, like that's, they're the most, you can't get any more natural than that, right? They're just, they're so natural. And yet with those natural experiences comes the need to emotionally process them so much. And what I'm realizing is that in all of our systems, we're in a society where we do not prioritize emotions mm-hmm. or emotional health or mental health. They're just, there isn't that. Like if you looked at a list of what a person needs when they're going to go through the birthing process, that you don't find on the list emotional processing of the experience, right?
Yeah.
Or like one huge facet of birthing doulas and death doulas both, like one of the biggest, and I talked about this yesterday, or sorry, the other day at church, one of the biggest facets is normalizing experiences. Because even though birth and death are so natural, within those experiences are some horrifying things. Like everybody who's ever given birth is like, whoa, like mm-hmm. that thing that happens to your body. Oh, like we all like
there's a reason why we'll Gino is afraid like, on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Totally. Like we'll all talk about those moments that are like, oh my God, I didn't know my body could do that. Or like that yeah. would come out of me yeah. or like, you know, the whole
sure,
thing.
Sure.
There's these horrifying things to process, disturbing. And by that, I just mean like, human bodies are amazing, right? And that can be so beautiful. But if you're not understanding that your experience fits within the spectrum of normal, and you just feel this huge thing happening to you and no one's walking you through that, you're not able to emotionally process it. And so like, for instance, there are things in death, in dying, in the entire, I mean, there's different stages in dying, just as there's different stages in birthing. In labor, you've got different stages and you've got transition. And in dying, mm-hmm. same thing. And you have what's called active dying, where you move from just like your body's deteriorating to, okay, now like literally there's no plateau. There's no other like up and down. It's just down from here. And there's, oh, wow. that's what they call active dying. Very wow. similar, actually, to the transition period in laboring for birth. And so in that are all like a huge spectrum of symptoms that can arise. And they can feel let me say it this way. They could be traumatizing. And I had that experience with watching my mom die. Some of those symptoms that happen, that occur when a person is dying, even though I'd known she was dying for years, and especially for the last few months, and then especially for the last few weeks, and then when active dying took place, okay, this is it. Like, I knew that. It's not that I didn't know she was dying, but the symptoms, visibly watching those things occur to a human body, can be so disturbing that it's actually traumatizing. But if you have someone there who can say, okay, here's exactly what is happening right now and why. Like, I had things that I learned in death doula class about the symptoms of a dying person that were happening to my mom 20 years ago. And I didn't ever have anyone say to me, oh, that's this thing that happens when someone is actively dying. Never. So I did not know how to emotionally process it. And in fact, the story I told myself was that, and it's hard because like there may be some truth to this thing too, but the story I told myself around some of those symptoms was that my mom had an exceptionally horrific death, right? Had I had a death doula there to walk me through some of those symptoms that I felt were so horrific, I actually learned through understanding the process of dying are actually just normal dying patterns and experiences. And not just that, not just that they're normal, but the dying person is actually okay. They're actually fine. Some of the things that present as painful or struggle, you learn to interpret, like a furrowed brow is like the main thing to look for. If someone has a furrowed brow, then you know that, okay, maybe they need some morphine. Because maybe they're actually struggling. But otherwise, even though the sounds, like a death rattle breathing, like they're okay. Wow. They're okay. But I didn't know that. So I spent 20 years not emotionally processing those things, having no idea where to begin doing so, and thinking that my experience was more horrific than it was. Does that make sense? So very healing, for one thing, to learn all that. And then I applied it back to my birthing experiences. And I went back and I like went through each one and thought about the different things that I had struggled with. And then so there's this beautiful part of doula work. We haven't even got to where this applies to the metaphor of community and belonging yet. But there's so much in the birth and death stuff. So, what was I just going to say? I stopped because I caught myself in how long I was talking, and now I can't remember what I was going to say.
We're starting to transition to the birthing experience and how...
Oh, okay. So one of the most beautiful pieces of work in doula work is... So I'll just talk about... Because I haven't trained as a birth doula, so I can't speak to that as much. One of my best friends is a birth doula, so it's fun because she's got the birth doula work and I've got the death doula work, and there's all these similarities, and that's really beautiful. In death doula work, which was modeled after birth doula work, and I know they do it for birthing too, there's a whole movement around it. But in death doula work, we call it reprocessing. And so after the death has occurred and the body has been taken away, the folks who were in that room, the caregivers, family members, anybody who was a part of that, they work with the doula to reprocess it all, to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, to name what stood out to you, what was the hardest for you, what scared you, tell the story. Like, even though we were all there, tell each person, tell us the story, say sounds what happened, incredible. Name it, reprocess it. And so the doula doesn't stop working with the people who were in the dying room until they've reprocessed the dying experience. And I just find that freaking phenomenal. Yeah. And then my friend Anissa, who does the birth doula work, talked about the same thing, where you go back and you tell the birth story again and again, and you kind of retell the story until it starts to sit differently.
I wish we would have done that.
Right? But I did it for myself because it's never, ever too late to reprocess. It's never too late. So that's what I did, is I was realizing that all this death doula work was bringing up more about my birthing than it was about my mom dying. And I was like, okay. So I just went through each of them and I thought of the things that came up for me. And then I just kept thinking about them and like reprocessing them until I, was able to just go ahead and blatantly name, like, of course, darling, that would be a really hard thing to like move through a process. And of course, you now know this thing about you. And one of the biggest struggles and why I say I had a hard time processing my birthing, it actually is funny because we talked about the movies and me being like, I'm not in the mood for that. Mm-hmm. And then moving to making, now I don't watch movies very often because of my choice around that.
Yeah.
Well, now I know all these things about myself. And when I gave birth to each of our kids, I didn't know myself. I didn't know my preferences. I definitely didn't know how to speak them. So now if I was going to give birth, oh my God, I would have so many specific preferences around who was in that room and what happened and where I was and who took care of what and how I wanted my body to be. And, you know, just all these things that like, if your body is going to go through a huge life transition and have this giant thing, this like transformative experience, then you should plan the shit out of that. And by plan, again, I don't mean that whole like saying how it's going to go down. I mean having choice. Choice is freedom, and choice changes so much about how you're able to process something. If you get to make a choice about how you want the space to be and what you're okay with and not okay with, especially about your body, like that just changes everything. The things that occurred to my body that I wouldn't have wanted to have happened to me, that of course that feels kind of a little bit violating and a little bit just out of control. Like I was trying to describe it on Sunday and I was like, all I can say is like, after my birth, I was like, what just happened to me? It felt like something happened to me. And I don't think that's how birth should feel. Mm. Something happened to me. It's this gorgeous, natural, you know, it's like the most organic thing in the world. And it's happening because of me. Like being able to honor that space and like feel like I participated in it fully and that I had full choice and involvement in it. It shouldn't feel like a car wreck, like a car came out of nowhere and hit me.
Defense.
Yeah. Shouldn't feel like that. So, anyway, those are all the things that I am learning and have learned about doula work, how a doula is just this person that can add extra support and make sure that you do have choice in the matter. Like a dying person to have choice about how they die. I cannot tell you how much that matters. It matters so much. That will have, because grief is a lifelong process no matter what. Like that's the thing, right, about these. Like I said that on Sunday, like the birth still happened. My kids were born. They born into the world. And my mom still dies. She still passed. So the events happen no matter what. But how we experience them, the process we go through after that, that just has so much possibility in it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not a given. Yeah. Like it's not a static given prescriptive.
It's not if event. You give birth then you're going to be traumatized for the rest of your life. No. And even with death, that is true. You do not have to be traumatized by death. Sometimes you are, but you don't have to be. There is a difference between a painful struggle and grief, especially if we're talking about the dying. Grief is a long, it's a lifelong thing. It doesn't go away. If someone dies, you experience grief around that for the rest of your life. That's just your new normal. And so that being the case, how important is it then that we eliminate extra harm and trauma in that? If I'm now going to be like committed to this lifelong process of grieving, then I need as much empowerment as possible to do that. And we're not empowering people to grieve if the death is chaotic and there's no choice in it and it feels traumatic, you know? So those are the things I'm learning about dying and birthing. And then it occurred to me that as a community at Sojourn Grace Collective and really everything you and I do as we bring people together, you know, with our pod fam and all of our work, as we're trying to build community, our whole thing is belonging, right? And and holistically caring for the soul. And it just occurred to me that the birthing and dying, that's, you know, actual physical person giving birth to a new human is just one type of birth. And a person dying, their physical life on this plane being over, is just one kind of death. We're all experiencing birth and death all the time. And the people who show up to our communities, everything that we do, those folks are dying to so many different things, dying to ideas, dying to ways of being in the world, dying to religious structures.
And, or have already died to
Yes. And, and it's just, there's so much death to process there.
So
helping people emotionally process those things so that we can reduce harm and reduce traumatic effects, help people move through any trauma they may already have. And then we're birthing a new thing. We're birthing a new way of being human and a new way of connecting with one another and doing community. So there's so much dying and birthing anyway. And then on top of that, just belonging in community itself, not only are we experiencing all this birthing and dying, so then the doula thing works for all of that. Like, let's just be spiritual doulas. But on top of that, like building community and building belonging, creating that sense of like, everybody's in here, baby, like the big tent, you know, you're talking about that. I think that requires us all to act as doulas, to each and every one of us take turns showing up for each other in that supportive space, assessing the situation, becoming very aware of each other's needs and walking alongside each other and curating the space. Just as in the birthing room, I wish that someone would have helped me decide what couldn't be in the room with me. You know, I don't want that smell. I don't want that sight. I don't want that sound. I want these people, not that person. That all applies. And being able to curate our spaces that carefully and emotionally process and do the reprocessing work, right? Tell your story. That's what we do at Soto already, retell your story, retell your story, tell us again what that religious trauma was. Say it again. And some people show up and get a little annoyed. You guys talk about that a lot. Well, guess what? We will keep doing that because the more you tell that same story, people need to talk about something until they don't need to talk about it anymore. Period. It's just what we Everyone, any story you have, you have to tell it until you suddenly don't. When people stop telling the story, it means they've moved through it, you know? Anyway, that was a lot of that. So I feel
thanks for not saying sorry, though. I was preparing myself to argue with you.
Just feel like we could all practice. And what's fascinating about all this is that, like, you know how humans over time evolve and get better, like we act better and we think better.
I believe that is
right,
what happens and is happening.
We evolve on a spectrum, but we evolve better, but it's not linear the way we picture it. And you know, we picture it down a line and humans were awful and barbaric, and then they're moving towards this like
enlightened.
Enlightened thing. It's definitely not linear. And what's coming up for me is that this doula work comes from more ancient ways of being in community, where people, you know, ancient cultures of women giving birth always took turns practicing being the support person for each other. That's just what they did. And then now in society, sure, we might have gotten better in some ways, but we really suck at those parts. Of our like main transformative experiences, and birth and death are the best examples, are now like
rushed,
capitalistic, corporate, commodified. Thank you. They're just big business.
Sterilized.
They're not sacred anymore, and they do not have the support structures in place for people. So going back to a more ancient way of being.
You've talked about how dying, death, we rush through death, and we rush through the funeral, and we rush through the burial, and then we're like, okay, move on. And, you know, we are somewhat familiar with older customs in which entire villages would shut down and participate in the mourning experience, and it would be a whole thing. Yeah.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So then, to think about that, those ideas in the context of building spiritual community and recognizing that we are walking people through various stages of death and birth as it relates to ideas and beliefs about themselves, about each other, about God, about life. We are attempting to the best that we can, and we're not the best at it, but to the best that we can, we're aware that, okay, that type of smell while doing this sort of work is going to be counterproductive. It's going to be, it's not going to help. Now, maybe we're wrong about that, but we are at least aware that there are smells that can contribute.
Oh, like another. Going back to the birthing room, I was saying, like, I don't want that smell in there. Yeah.
Or so that sort of music is going to make it harder.
Yes.
And so to go all the way back to the it all belongs, part of what that can't mean is that everything.
We do whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that everything has equal right to be in the space.
Yep.
That actually would create a context in which belonging would be frustrated. Mm-hmm. And wellness and whole being and wholeness, like we talk about our church, would be frustrated.
Yeah.
And so we actually do, like, for instance, when we do small groups, we create group norms that establish what sorts of behaviors and responses to people to the best of our knowledge as spiritual community doulas. Mm-hmm. And again, we may be wrong about it, but we are, with our experience and our education and all that, we are saying, okay, these sort of responses work against the healing, work against the way to make this help this thing die, and the way to. So anyway, it's just fascinating to think about. For me, and to use that to bring all of that wisdom and insight and metaphor and imagery into the work that we do, to help understand. Oh, that's why intuitively you and I, like, that sort of energy works against our mission in this space. Right. And not always exactly sure why, or not always able to fully articulate it, mm-hmm. but we just know. Like, if you play that music while that person's trying to give birth, the baby's not going to want to come out.
Well, or the mom's going to be traumatized afterwards.
The baby's going to come out. The baby's going to come out. And the mom was going to be like, that was hard.
Yeah.
Harder than it needed to be.
Yep. Yeah. And I think one of our biggest values around that is, like, that we're still trying to live into is, how do we make sure that everybody knows that they're a doula, not just you and I? Like, we can't be the doulas
to
150 people or whatever. So I think that's part of my passion right now, is empowering people. And even, I mean, you might even use the word training a little bit, but I kind of think what we do is inherently some training for it. But it's more just naming for them, like, this is what you're doing, mm-hmm. so that they feel empowered to keep doing it. But it's like, truly live the way that groups of humans in more ancient times lived, where you take turns.
Yeah.
This person birthing right now, then the rest of us are coming around them. And I think it's important that everyone feels empowered to do that work.
Yeah. And you know what would suck is if you're the Aunt Jeanette who is on the list of a person that wouldn't feel good for the mother to have in the room. Mm-hmm. That would suck to be the Aunt Jeanette. Sure.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, we name that would suck. But we are not centering Aunt Jeanette's experience and feelings in this moment. We're centering the birthing person.
Yes, that's right.
And so I'm even thinking about, in the context of our church, it would suck to be the person who... Nobody would show up at Sojourn, like, well, they have. They've found their way in. But it would suck to be the person at Sojourn that really wanted to support Trump and really thinks that we should talk about all lives matter and really thinks that the gospel is this. It would really suck to say to that person, those ideas just aren't going to get hearing. They're not. They're not. They're not going to get hearing. You can wait in the waiting room.
Yeah.
That sucks. But not like...
It does, but my thing is that it's really empowered me to understand that that's not us contradicting our value of belonging.
Yes.
That is us protecting our culture of belonging, because there are certain things that are antithetical to belonging, certain things that work against belonging.
Yep.
And so then we just say no to those things so that we can truly create belonging. And I worked with a person during death doula training where it was, I don't want these things in the room with me while I'm dying. These actions and behaviors. I really have a hard time, though. It would stress me out to hold the idea of knowing, even though you as the doula would be the one doing it and I wouldn't have to. It'd be really painful for me to hold the idea of you just telling all those family members that they can't come in. Okay. So then it becomes, we make the list of behaviors and actions. And then what you say to the humans is, if you're willing to follow these norms, if you're willing to protect the dying space, if you're willing to come into her dying room and honor these things, we're here. Like, you're part of it. You're not on the outside. Like, we're not saying that you can't come in. Yeah. We're saying these things can't come in. And I felt like that was such a perfect, you know, metaphor too, or not even a metaphor, just parallel to what we're doing in our community as well. It's like, we're not telling anybody that there's no human being.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that.
Come on, humans, all the humans. Mm-hmm. But we have these lists of norms and these behaviors and actions, and like, you got to sign on, you got to follow the rules. All humans belong, not all behaviors do, not all ideas do, not all theologies do.
Right.
Not all songs, like you named, I like that you named that. Yeah. This music is.
And I love the way you phrase it. It's not so much that they don't belong, it's that they work against the.
Those things, those actions.
Yeah, like they actually hinder true belonging.
Yeah, like, so our little catchphrase is "it all belongs," and someone could say, why do you say it all belongs if some actions and behaviors and ideas you don't allow in the space? You don't really mean it all belongs. I'm like, no, I extra mean it. I really mean it. And the way that you live out the value of it all belongs is you don't allow things that actively work against it all belongs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
You're really smart.
Thanks. So are you. Thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for sharing. Thanks for saying yes to God's invitation for you to do some end-of-life doula work. I'm really excited about that.
Me too. It's good stuff. And if I start talking about our kids' birth stories a lot, I'm reprocessing
after I kind of want to know more about that. Retell and rehear the stories. Somewhere we have at least one of our kids, if not multiple of our kids, like lots of video of that.
Oh, I do not want to see that. That would not be helpful for me.
No. Okay. Cool.
Thanks for offering.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But hey, some blue and purple lights would be great.
Yeah. When you're in the midst of talking a lot, I wanted to make the joke about, would you change the lighting, how the lighting was? But I didn't want to do that thing where I interject jokes.
Yes. All the time. It would be dark.
Yeah.
Thanks for holding back on your joke making.
I'm learning.
Thanks.
All right.
Love you.
I love you. End of episode? How do we end these again? We don't have like a bumper video that takes us out.
I know, we got used to live streaming. Bye, pod fam.
Goodbye, pod fam.
Catch you on the flip side.
Thanks for listening to our Garage Sessions. If you're new around here, now's the time to mention that The Kate and Colby Show is also a live streaming show that airs Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific on YouTube and Facebook. Our live show is all about holistic care for the soul, and we bring on guests from all around the world to help us learn how to care for our souls in all sorts of beautiful ways. If you've never caught a live show, we invite you to make a point to do so. Just head to kateandcolby.com, where you can find our YouTube channel, and click subscribe, or head to our Facebook page and like the show. Speaking of liking the show, if you enjoyed this episode, here are three ways that you can show your support. First, you can say thanks with your wallet by going to buymeacoffee.com/KateandColby, KateandColby, and just buy us a coffee or two for like $5 each. Second, consider leaving us a review and a rating on whatever platform you listen to your pods. Oh, and go ahead and smash that subscribe button while you're at it. Finally, tell someone you know about The Kate and Colby Show.
if you think our unique perspectives and honest conversations are something that they'd find interesting and inspiring. The Kate and Colby Show is produced by Holy Living Studios in San Diego, with special thanks to our monthly baristas, Susan, Joel, Anna, Melanie, James, Julie, Bill, Patty, Amanda, and Lisa. Until next time, be well.